This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big, bad show tonight.
Wendy's Big Show, back on a Monday, a Martin Luther King holiday Monday. No Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, Gary Ellerson, but in terms of 105.7 FM, the bench, you can't bring off a better player than the franchise player, and the franchise player is in town. Tim Allen, sitting alongside myself, Bill Schmidt, Baby Tausch. Welcome back, brother.
What's up, boys?
Nice seeing you.
Yeah, good seeing you guys. Good to be back on the radio on a non-baseball show.
It's kind of weird whenever I see you in here. It's like a ghost when you come on in the middle of the winter. But you're in here now.
I still work here.
After people are
honestly
wondering.
God, I can hear the gears turning on people in the hallways here. You know,
just like, wait, what is he doing here?
In November, December, January, even a little bit of February. You still work here. Yeah, yep. Sort of.
Nope, you haven't gotten rid of me that easily.
Kind of do.
So what is a Tim Allen winter like this now as we sit here on January 21st? What does that consist of? I mean, fantasy show and hot stove weekly, but that's 3 hours out of the week.
A lot of tinkering at home. And this time it's...
Oh, that sounds very old.
No, it's good. It's fun. It is. It's a lot of bins and boxes being gone through and restacking and looking for things to sell because I'm not working and I need money. And finding,
we can find you something to sell.
I gave Sparky a little honorarium that I found in my basement.
Oh, nice!
We have about 2.8 billion baseballs in the house. Just buckets of baseballs, collector's baseballs. You know, remember the J.J. Hardy on a baseball, and then Prince Fielder on a baseball. All those
opening
things.
Night on a baseball.
All my kids' baseball from. First home run in the 9-year-old Little League, you know, that sort of stuff. And then I found a Mickey Mouse baseball.
Oh, so that was very nice of you. Very
I
nice.
I thought it was.
How about that?
Extended the olive branch.
Maybe you'll hear about
bit.
That on the World According to Sparky podcast. You can find it at 105.7fmthefan.com's Fan on Demand every week.
I better. That deserves a mention. I thought it was a kind olive branch gesture.
Oh, so you're saying what needed to be mentioned was that you did something nice for someone.
Yeah, a lot of people don't think we're very nice, so we have to advertise that.
So Tim Allen in studio for the next, 5 hours, 4 hours here on the Wendy's Big Show. Then we will reverse roles for Hot Stove Weekly from 6 to 7. This is kind of different for me, as some people, the listeners will understand. I'll be running point today. You and I have different roles on the post-game show, but welcome in. I'm glad that you're able to come on in here in the afternoons with us now.
Yeah, anytime. Pressure's on you. For the next few hours.
Oh,
and
I can't wait.
Then it flips around at 6 o'clock, pressure on me as the lead chair. But yeah, I mean, football, what a day yesterday.
And if people have conspiracies of NFL games having, I don't know if you want to say, predetermined outcomes, or if the outcomes could be stirred or steered in a certain way, they might think that after yesterday's performance by the officiating crews in both championship games.
Our boy Horvat is here, and we're going to have him do some homework assignments today for sure. We had the guy in, or on, I should say, some years ago from a book that was titled The Fix Is In. I don't know if you remember that. He wrote a book, or it's a website or something like that. I can't recall, but I think the guy's from Kenosha. As it turns out, he lived like a mile and a half from me. I never knew it, but he's...
It's weird because people in Kenosha all hang out with each other.
Yeah. He's a proponent of getting your mind rolling about, you know, maybe things aren't as, you know, amenable to a game as it shows.
Sure.
So then you get the call yesterday. There's a ton to unpack on this. There is with the Saints non-call. Has anyone asked the referee specifically on this? Have you seen anything? Have you read anything?
And no,
did he speak yet?
There hasn't been any quotes from the officiating crew on the field. Al Riveron, the head of officiating, obviously spoke with Peyton and Sean Payton.
Yeah.
We heard that in Ryan's last update, but we'll play a lot of that coming up for the next 4 hours. But I haven't heard any official word from those guys that were on the field.
Right. Don't you want to hear from him, the guy looking right at the play? That guy. That's the guy I want to talk to. In terms of the NFL being fixed or pro sports being fixed,
mm-hmm.
I don't think they are. Just let me say that right off the get-go here. I don't think they are. However, if you look at it in a general sense, in a big macro sense, if judges, jurors, lawyers, politicians, business owners, contractors have all in the past been paid off for monetary gain of some sort, are we naive to think that NFL referees or NBA officials have never been? We know in the NBA.
We know.
Someone did time
mm-hmm.
for that. The NFL has never really exposed anything like that. And I'm not saying that that is the case in the Saints game yesterday. But I don't know. It does get the
right.
gears turning.
Well, and also with the advancements of sports gambling in the last year, 2 years, 5 years, however long you want to go back, it was taboo in pro sports to even mention the fact of what the spread was. I mean, it was Michaels Brent Musburger, were the first ones to really mention that people have scratch on these games. You know,
yeah.
when a field goal would come in the last 26 seconds and Brett would go, well, you know, that might be meaningful to somebody. And there has been such more conversation about the world of gambling that if something was going to be uncovered, one, you would think that it would have happened by now. Two, now that the attention and money is being pumped into sports gambling and pro sports, you can only imagine that if somebody is taking a class action lawsuit or getting a private investigator to investigate
right.
some kind of game that was played between LSU and Grambling State back in 2006 that they lost 100.5 on.
Given the PI, if it's called, or the hit to the head, whatever it was, personal foul or PI, either way, it's, you know, first down and
mm-hmm.
roughly the one or whatever.
It's a first and goal, and you can go up by a touchdown, yeah. and they have to drain timeouts.
So we know the NFL. That wasn't a cinch for anything. It is the NFL. Funky things happen. Strange things happen. Maybe Ingram fumbles on first and goal at the one. Maybe Lutz misses a field goal. Maybe it's blocked and returned the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's acting as if this was a slam dunk Saints win if they get that call. I'm not convinced of that either.
I'm also still not convinced that Sean McVay made the right decision to kick the field goal and not the game up at 20. There are so many different chances in that game for it to be completely flipped. Anybody remember the first quarter? Back-to-back possessions inside the red zone, and the Saints come away with two field goals?
Right.
One that started, what, on the 26th after the interception by Davis?
Yep.
Off the hands of Todd Gurley. That's another one. Todd Gurley plays, what, 10 plays in the game?
What's going on with him?
Drops two balls. One goes into the hands of a Saint. There were, and Nate Burleson, who I think is just awesome.
Excellent.
On Good Morning Football today on the NFL Network was breaking it down from a player standpoint, and some of them were giving him a hard time for the takes that he had on the situation and understanding that he was coming from a player's standpoint, not a fan's perspective, where you're seeing what happens in front of you and just reacting on that. He's reacting on the instincts of being in those situations where you go into the huddle and say, guys, that's over. It's done.
Yep.
We got to move on. Sean Payton really did not move on at all yesterday after that play happened with 1.5 minutes left.
How do you prevent then something like this from having as big of an impact on the outcome as it did? Is there any way really to prevent something like this? Now, those of you that have been listening to the shows that I've done for years, you guys know where I'm at with all of sports. especially the big three.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big proponent of replay in any way, shape, or form. Just get rid of it. Just get rid of it all. Now, again, that's not the issue here. But how do you prevent something like this from having as big of an impact? I didn't know this until today. Never knew this. Watching NFL as you, your entire life, my entire life, just like more than double.
Mm-hmm.
But I never knew the commissioner had like a nuclear option on this. Did you know this?
Oh, yeah. He can press the reset button.
I did not know mm-hmm. that. It's never come up in all the conversations, all the work I've done in and around sports. Never, ever. So there's apparently a rule in the NFL rule book that he could either reset the game at a certain point or replay the entire game.
The commissioner's exempt rule is what it is that Roger Goodell could install or push that would either stop everything after that play, call the penalty, and then you play on, or completely reset the game as it starts.
Okay, so that being said, if not in this case, and I'm not advocating either way, I'm just saying, if not in this case, what then would it take to invoke that rule? What would have to happen for the commissioner of the NFL, whoever it is, whether it was now, 10 years, 15, 50 years ago, or 50 years from right now, to invoke that rule?
They lost money or endorsements off of it. That's really all it comes down to, though.
What would have to happen? Where a bunch of sponsors pull out mm-hmm. because of a missed call?
Well, I saw a sports book in New Jersey's refunding bets on the game due to the widespread belief that the team was victimized on the blown call.
Come
so this
on.
Is in New Jersey. I feel like if we start seeing things like that, some books lose some money, that's when we could – I mean, so put it this way. I actually looked up this rule a couple years back, and I don't remember why. And then yesterday it got brought back up. It's Rule 17, Section 2, Article 3, pretty much the commissioner's powers – the reversal of a game or the rescheduling of a game from the beginning or from the point at which the act occurred. So pretty much what Billy said, they could either restart the whole thing or go back to the play, give them the ball on, the 1 yard line, get everybody together for, 2 minutes of a game. I don't see it ever happening, but that's a good question, what it would take.
Then why is the rule there then? I mean, if this is mm-hmm. this was an egregious situation, right?
As you can make it. It's in the NFC Championship game. There's the audio or the video of Sean Payton yelling at the official in question, like we talked about, that we haven't heard from, saying, "Bro, that's a Super Bowl call you just missed."
Yeah.
That's not a call in the middle of the third quarter of a game in week 6. If there was a major time to do it, it would be at that time, you would imagine.
This is why I don't get all hyped up in people's legacies. Like, Drew Brees only has one ring. Aaron Rodgers has only one ring because there's just so many factors that play into it. But a crazy thing that I saw yesterday, so the Canadian Football League, you could actually challenge defensive pass interference calls. So in the last, 10 years, 45% of them or something like that have been reversed. On the missed call, we blew that call, and they just give them the ball on the 1 yard line.
But
I don't know if you go to that extent, but
in that same vein, I don't know if you can make that call or if you can challenge that decision because a flag's not been thrown. Do you challenge the play that this is what happened, and then you really are going into the digs and bowels of instant replay?
And that's horrible in my world because I'm a guy that wants instant replay just gone. So that wouldn't even play a part. We are arguing as much or more once we obtained instant replay in all of sports. It's okay. That's what the water cooler talk, there I'm dating myself, but the water cooler talk
great
is all
sports
about.
Radio cliche.
I know. On Mondays, when you do talk to the dudes at work about that call yesterday, we still do that. It hasn't stopped that at all yet.
No, what it has done though, Tim, it's made it better.
Has it made it right?
Right. That's a different question because then you're bringing in people's, ethics, which I don't want to bring into this conversation.
Did
at
Julian
all.
Edelman's thumbnail hit that football? Are we convinced that it didn't? That's what we're arguing about now. Instead of the actual call, wow, that referee missed a call. Edelman touched that ball. Instead, we're arguing, I didn't see the angle that had him clearly not touching the football,
right.
We still argue as much or more. Now, is that good or bad? I think the debate is always good. Either way, replay or not. I just feel that I end up arguing more about football and baseball, for that matter, once replay was implemented.
Tim Allen in for Gary and Sparky and Leroy. He's the franchise player, so he can fill as many roles as possible. Tim and Tausch take over the Wendy's Big Show. How does that sound?
That sounds good. Are we going to get in trouble for that?
Well, we didn't. You know, we made sure that we played all the things that we necessarily needed to do.
Okay.
Paul Wagner coming up at 2:48. Talk a little bit with Wags about the Milwaukee Brewers within a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting. We're about a month and a half away from you and I getting out there.
On deck Sunday.
Sunday. And it's one of the things that I laugh about as a Brewers fan, thinking where that event has come from. Mm. You can call us at 414-799-1250 if you want to talk some NFL rule changes as we discuss the replay situation that just goes up and down every single week. Or if you just want to say hello to Tim Allen and wish him a happy January 21st.
Just how do you prevent what happened yesterday in that Saints game from happening? How do you fix it? How do you prevent it? That's really what this is all about.
I don't want to prevent it at all. Not even a little bit. Keep the controversy coming. It's the fam.
Obviously, it's a disappointing way to lose a game. Frustrating, you know, just getting off the phone with the league office. They blew the call, and that call puts it first and 10. We're on an E3 plays. It's a game-changing call. So what do? You get back up, and you start going to work. This will be a tough one for these players, for the coaches. And again, Rams did a great job. It was a well-fought game, hard-fought game.
There is Sean Payton, Saints head coach.
What
Sean,
do you do?
There is something you can do. You stop yelling at the official and have your Hall of Fame quarterback not throw interceptions. I think that's the number one way that you change that outcome.
So what do we
Wendy's do? Wendy's Big Show on the fan. Tim Allen in for Gary and Stevie.
So what do we do to prevent this in the future? Or is this part of the landscape of the NFL? That you are oftentimes going to have these, you know, these epic sort of, you know, immaculate reception sort of things that happen that we'll remember forever. The, you know, the catch in the NFC title game and, you know, things like that. They'll always just be that moment, these moments in the NFL. Is this one of them? That's the way it looks.
The commissioner's exempt rule 17, section 2, article 3. The commissioner's powers under the section 2 include imposition of monetary fines, draft choice, forfeitures, suspension of players involved in unfair acts, and, if appropriate, the reversal of a game's result or the rescheduling of a game, either from the beginning or from the point at which the extraordinary act occurred.
I find it interesting referees, officials, were not mentioned in what you just read.
They were not.
Players.
Players. It's a player's game. And this is where my biggest issue with the argument comes in. They got the ball back. The game's not over.
Right.
You still take the lead. You still put your defense out onto the field against a third-year quarterback who, if anybody watched the first half of that game yesterday, Jared Goff, talk about an absolute resurgence of a dude. The first series, he looks over and says, dude, I can't hear you. Next three series, I can't hear you. I don't know what the play is. They went from not being able to call in plays, it was so loud in the Superdome, to completely neutralizing, having Jared Goff, a third-year quarterback, come back with not one, but two game-tying drives to allow an opportunity to force overtime.
Agreed. And there's another thing. I would like to call it old guy syndrome or whatever. Another thing I'd like to see abolished, these speakers and headphones. In helmets? Are you kidding me?
Oh, come on.
That
is old
be,
man.
It should be Vince Ferragamo over there on the sidelines looking like a third base coach. I mean, that's what it used to be. These guys are looking at defensive alignments. Now, again, the headset are they're shut off at the 15-second mark, right?
Mm-hmm, 15-second mark, has been one of the calling cards of Sean McVay's greatness as a quarterback coach and an offensive coordinator, as a head coach, that he is making sure Goff is getting up to the line, seeing the formation, seeing the defensive alignment, knowing their call, and then immediately saying, hey, check here, off to the left. Brandon's going to be wide open on a streak.
Yeah,
cover two,
like,
right off to the left.
Sounding like Tony Romo.
Mm-hmm.
Who, by the way, just had an amazing game yesterday.
It was outstanding.
An amazing, amazing call yesterday. He is by far, intellectually, in terms of football acumen, one of the best I've heard. I mean, he is calling plays before they even happen. And that was the rumor of his first year coming out. And I didn't really buy into it that much, but now I do.
Which
not
is,
to get off topic.
Which is
I
funny,
do.
You know, for you, circumstances appeasing. That's your, that's your quarterback right there. That's your quarterback.
That's my quarterback.
414-799-1250. How do you make sure something like what we had yesterday in the Saints-Ram game, the NFC Championship game, how does that not happen again? How do you make it that the officials cannot so blatantly miss such a game-changing, pivotal call to determine not just the outcome of a Week 7 game,
right,
but in a championship game, a game with such magnitude? Look at the storylines, Timmy, that we missed out on. We missed out on Breeze and Brady in a Super Bowl.
Would have been cool.
Would have been amazing. Would have been as good, if not better, than what we missed out on in 2014, when it should have been Rodgers and Brady.
That too.
And by the way,
cool.
There are a lot more tie-ins that I will make to that 2014 NFC Championship game, because yesterday I just could not get over thinking about the correlations between that game and the game we just saw yesterday.
And the Seattle debacle?
The Seattle debacle and what we saw in the Dome yesterday. But one team was playing on the road, the other team was playing at home. There's absolutely no excuse that Sean Payton allowed that to happen.
Just don't know if it's something you can prevent. And I want to hear from the guy looking at the play, the official looking at the play. What do you think? Now, you could say that, well, he obviously wanted to let him play. And it looked like within the game that that's what the officials were kind of doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were some other non-calls.
Very, very loose. I think in both games, the officiating crews were allowing those defensive backs to play.
And I wonder if that was a plan heading into the game. Within their prep work, within their meetings, whatever they go through, however they diagnose a game, the officials, that is, if they were going to, quote, let them play. I don't know if let them play is in the rule book, right? So it's like a baseball player that says, well, he's calling, he's giving them the outside corner, you know, 2 inches out. No, it doesn't matter what he's given. That's not what the rule book says. The rule book says, the rule book doesn't say let him play. The rule book doesn't say Maddox always gets 3 inches outside the outside corner. They follow the rules. What was he thinking? Was this a full-time ref? Was this a part-time ref? They did add in, I want to say,
begs your question as well,
11 or 12 full-time officials in the NFL. So I like that trend that they are, you know, broadening the horizon.
That's a great point.
Of being full-time, but was he a full-time? Was he a part-time? I don't know.
It was the same argument that was made during the Fail Mary when the conversation was with the replacement refs. This is going to end when somebody gets costed a game.
Yes.
That was the situation. You had some. It cost the team a game. Like I said, it was a Week 4 game on Monday Night Football. They didn't care. Now it's a championship game. Does the conversation turn? On the south side, Jim's on the fan. What's up, Jim?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you guys doing?
More fantastic. Important how you are, Jim. What's up?
I'm fantastic. You know, as a parent, as a player, as a coach, I had to deal with, you know, I tell myself all the time, you know, as a coach, I can't say certain things because I can't say things, or coach can't coach next week. And your last caller 40 minutes ago was talking about Belichick. No one praises this guy. No one praises him. You know, he is the next Lombardi. He really is. And henceforth, did the call suck? Yeah. But you saw Sean go just kind of like, you know, laid back a little bit. He went to the sidelines. There's a ref in front of him. He can't say things because, you know, when you say things, you get penalized with money.
Hey, Jim, how do we stop this from happening again?
The hard part is that, you know, as a coach, are you frustrated? Sure you are. So what can you say or do? That's the, that's the million-dollar question. How can you stop it? Because you can't say things. So how do you stop it? I have no answer because he was laid back.
Jim, where are you today? Are you at work today? What are you doing?
Sir, I'm chilling in my household.
That's what I like to hear, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Way to spend the holiday upright.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll keep you company for the next couple hours, Jim. Thanks, man.
You can't.
He gave an answer. I don't know. I don't know how you change it. And that's kind of my answer as well. I'm talking about the officiating.
Your knee-jerk reaction to answer that question would be replay. Throw the flag.
Mm-hmm.
Throw a challenge flag.
Challenge it, right.
And say, hey, take a look at that. That's pretty bad. And they would have, right? So now what you're advocating now is expanding replay. Did you see the standstill that happened in the second game yesterday, the game last night?
The 5.5-minute delay there was a second shooter on Julian Edelman's left thumb.
Or another shooter in the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, guys. There's challenges, and then it's under 2 minutes, so then it's an official challenge. When is it an official challenge, can I ask?
Under 2 minutes.
Okay, but when?
Or in all of overtime.
What play? Anytime a coach gets on an official? You got to challenge that, man, because you can't throw a flag. Can't throw the challenge flag. So it's anything close then?
Well, that's what it is in college, and it makes me feel like the college rules are far superior to the NFL replay rules. When do we have these kind of conversations in college? Oh, we don't know if it was caught. No, that guy upstairs decides, yes, it was caught. No, it wasn't.
Right.
That was a touchdown. No, it wasn't. We don't have seven different dudes, and we don't have Cleet, whatever his name is, the official that was in the second game.
Blakeman.
That was my favorite part of the entire time, was hearing Gene Steratore call him Cleet, because I thought he was mispronouncing his name. And you have how many different cooks in the kitchen, right? In baseball, what do? New York's deciding it. On the field, we have no judgment. We're just the messenger. In the NFL, the calling official gets to state his case. The acting official gets to state his case, and the dudes in New York get to state their case. But, we have a lot more conversation. That breeds to better answers. No, it doesn't.
It leads to
confusion. Confusion.
I agree. It does muddy the waters. And we could right now, Bill, you and I and Ryan, we could take a look. If we had all the angles, we could still be debating the Julian Edelman. Did it touch his forearm, his shoulder? Did it scuzz his thumb?
Mm-hmm.
We could still be looking at it. And I don't know if that's good for the game. I'm not sure. I'm not sure yet.
We could still be deciding if Jesse James scored a touchdown last year.
Yes.
We could still be discussing if Dez Bryant caught the ball or if he was reaching into the end zone.
You had two catches where the ball hit the ground yesterday.
We could still be arguing if Anthony Miller's was a fumble and the Bears should have gotten the ball on the 6-yard line.
If you'd have told me in 1978 that a ball could hit the ground and it still was a catch, I'd say you're crazy.
I hate to go down this hill, man, but how is the Dez Bryant catch not a catch? And I'm the biggest Packer fan out there, but Edelman's grab was ruled a catch yesterday. He never had control of that ball. It hit the ground.
I don't get it.
It slides, but it did look like the fingertip might have been underneath the leather seam.
And then how does that get reversed? Because there was no substantial evidence. What camera view? I mean,
that's a great point.
I thought that it couldn't be reversed unless
clear
it was substantial.
And obvious.
That was not clear and obvious. There's no way that you could tell me one official, two officials go over there, look at that video, and say, that's substantial right there. He did not touch that, or he did touch that. Either way. So that should stay what it was called initially on the field. How do you change that? That's my problem with the games yesterday.
How do you fix it? And I do like some of the tweaks that they have done with the catch rules. I got to be honest. I do. These guys' paws are so big that sometimes the ball is moving, yet they still have. They're not going to drop that football. Their fingers are wrapped almost all the way around it, yet it's moving just a little bit. That means he doesn't have control of it. I do like that aspect of it. But any part of the ground that hits that football, I don't know, man. That part's tough.
And guess what? The NFL loves every single second of this thing.
Why? We're talking about
every single second of it. Quickly before the break, we'll get Tony and Waukesha in here. What's up, Tony?
Hey, I know you guys are all over that non-call at the end of the game and the Saints would have had the ball at the 5 and the first down and all that. But I was listening to the game on the radio, and after they got again caught that pass inside the 15 and they go to the 2-minute warning, and then they have the incomplete pass on first down, the Saints do.
Yep.
The analyst on the radio call was going crazy. He's like, what are they doing? And right there, run it 3 times, and if you break one into the end zone, great. If not, you get the field goal. But the Rams Rams only had two timeouts. So what happened there is they had the two incompletions. They only burned 20 seconds, mm-hmm. whereas the Rams would have been getting the ball with no timeouts and under 40 seconds.
Yeah, it would have been around 30 seconds. I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, nobody's talking about that, but that was terrible game management there. And that was even worse than the Bears a few weeks ago, not calling those timeouts before the two-minute warning. You know, so in both instances, probably, you know, might have cost them the game.
Tony, you're like me, man. It's a dying art in the NFL.
Yeah, it's a great call.
Clock management.
We also got to see Andy Reid last night, who's one of the greatest non-managers of the clock ever.
Horrible.
Horrible. Hey, Sammy Watkins, either score the touchdown, or why don't you just drop back just a little bit longer? We'll cut down maybe a few more seconds off that clock, kid.
Yeah.
414-799-1250, Wendy's Big Show. Tim Allen in for Steve Sparky Pfeiffer, Gary Ellerson. On a Martin Luther King Monday, we'll also talk a little bit of Bucks coming up here as they're in the middle of a battle down at Fiserv Forum, 79-72 right now, leading Luka Doncic. That name is still going to mess me up for the next 19 years that the guy's in the league. We'll talk with Matt Velasquez coming up at 4:35 about that one, and also a little bit of Giannis talk coming up. But Wendy's Big Show, talking NFL. How do you change what happened in yesterday's NFC Championship game? Not from going back and changing the outcome, but moving forward. Because we move forward with our friends at Ford Financial Partner on the Wendy's Big Show. Tim and Tausch takeover on the Wendy's Big Show. Tim Allen in for Gary, Stevie, and Leroy. Thanks for joining us here. I'm juiced that you're in here.
Can we play, like, I don't know, Loving the Crew, or, you know, The Beat Goes On, or...
No, those are both expired. We can't play those. We dropped them out of the system after the Milwaukee Brewers cost us all that money. We are going to talk a little bit of gambling here in the probably about a half hour, maybe 20 minutes or so, as you and I have gone out to Las Vegas. Some people don't know this about us. Listenership is always changing. You and I both enjoy Sin City. Mm-hmm. You have enjoyed it many more times than I have.
61 times total. You've been there
three times. This will be my fourth time.
Okay.
Right? Yeah.
Catching up.
Yeah, and slowly but surely.
Yeah.
And the last 2 years, one of the things that you and I have done since we started working here was go to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl. Been there during the Atlanta-New England Super Bowl. We were there last year for Nick Foles' day.
Mm-hmm.
And we will be out there again this year. There's one common thing about those two games, and people might call us crazy for what we talk about at 3 o'clock, and I'm just thinking about doing it again.
And now 3, because New England's right back in there.
Mm-hmm.
What we did, and it's tough to bet against Brady and Belichick, right? But we've done it for the past two seasons. Walk up to the betting window in the sports book, and we bet against Brady and Belichick.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I get it. You're saying have your head examined. However, in the last 2 years, we're 1-1. Now, do we keep that trend going, bet against the New England Patriots, Belichick and Brady? And now here we go, 2 out of 3. Which way is it going to go? I just find it tough to bet on the Rams. Are the Rams that good?
Might be.
I don't know. I can't figure it out.
Just might be. A lot of people didn't know if the Patriots were that good. 17 years to the day that they will kick off Super Bowl 53. These two organizations met in Super Bowl 36 back in, that was in the Superdome, I believe.
2001 season, 2002 calendar year. And I didn't realize that of the Brady Belichick run, that was their first title. And I didn't even realize it was against the Rams.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Warner, Marshall Faulk, greatest show on turf.
Yep.
One of the best teams I've ever seen assembled.
I forgot about that. So do we keep that trend going? My first reaction was to go against Brady and Belichick again. I got to say, now I may change in the next, 13 days until the kickoff. I don't know, man. I think it's about time. If I know you guys don't like Brady and Belichick and the New England Patriots, the evil empire, put all the names on it you want. But isn't it about time you start respecting it? That run, and now the knee jerk is, well, they cheated, right? So you find ways.
Oh yeah, that ball definitely hit Julian Edelman.
Yeah, you find ways, and every call goes for the New England Patriots.
Three replay reviews yesterday in the fourth quarter, all three of them went to the side of the New England Patriots.
Deflate gate and suspensions.
One of the officials in the game yesterday was a member of the Deflate Gate crew.
And so you come up with these things to kind of justify your hate for the New England Patriots. But at some point, don't the numbers say that, holy crap, these guys are good, right? I mean, to respect it at least.
There's greatness among us, and it's hard not to disdain that because I think a lot of it is just pure jealousy. But at some point, it's just throw your hands up and say, how do you beat these dudes? How do you do it?
I don't know if you can. Now, are they going to? It's so difficult to win a Super Bowl, and I learned that from Gary and Leroy on this show, that so many factors are involved. So many things got to happen. So many things that aren't even in your control. Someone else beats someone else to affect the seeding in the playoffs, et cetera. All these things that play a part, all these things got to bounce right. But then to do it like the New England Patriots are doing it, and to consistently be there, what was that, their eighth consecutive?
Eighth consecutive. This will be the ninth Super Bowl appearance in 18 seasons for Brady and Belichick.
In the Green Bay Packers' 100-year history, they have 30-some-odd playoff wins, postseason wins, including Super Bowls. And Brady and Belichick, Robert Kraft, in the last 25 years, have 30-some-odd playoff victories or Super Bowl victories within 25 years. I mean, that... And in large part, it was Belichick and Brady and that run that they're on. I think it's over. I got to say, I think it's over. I think they got there. I think the blind squirrel found the acorn 2 years ago down 28-3. And they come back and they win that game with a lot of help from Atlanta. I just think it's over. I think the run's done. Is it impressive? Yes. They're there again. Ninth Super Bowl, as you said. But I just think it's done. I do. I think the Rams are going to find a way.
I don't think we're done with this conversation. We're going to bring more football talk coming up back at 3 o'clock. But Paul Wagner played in the MLB, played for your Milwaukee Brewers. He's going to join us, talk a little bit of Brewers baseball. Is Wags going to be at On Deck? We'll have to ask him because he's usually featured doing something, you know, maybe throwing eggs at someone's face because they do 19 hours worth of On Deck this year.
That's right.
And it has changed from four guys sitting at a table in the food court of Brookfield Square when it was free, and now it's a sold-out event. Talk some Brewers baseball next. Tim and Tausch in on the Wendy's Big Show. Gary and Sparky back tomorrow with me. We're still here till 6 o'clock here, and a lot of chances also. 3, 4, 5, and 6 for you to win $1,000. That's four chances for you to win $1,000. You can't leave. So Wendy's Big Show on the Fan. Tim Allen in for Gary and Sparky. I'm Bill Schmidt, baby Tausch. Me sitting in this. This is my first Monday officially as the host of the Wendy's Big Show. So
2019 championship season coming up for the crew. Loving the crew. The beat goes on. At least something.
We do have to find something. Maybe Wags has an idea for us. Paul Wagner, former Brewers pitcher, joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Wags, how you doing today, buddy?
Oh, I woke up to minus 10, so I'm freezing my ass off. I get in my Don and Coke explodes. You know what? I need to move south.
Hey, the right of the baseball season, I think one of the benchmarks is the Brewers on Deck event. You're involved. You're with the alumni group, right? You're there.
Yeah. But first off, I wanted to tell Tausch, hey, congratulations on filling one of those seats there in the Big Show there, Tausch. Congratulations.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you, Wags.
Yeah, and also, just to let people know, I know we've been getting a lot of response and some questions, inquiries, if you will, about Tim and Tausch doing the post-game show. The answer is yes.
Yes, still on.
It's still a go, so no worries there. But, yeah, looking forward to On Deck, Paulie. What's going on? Huge impact the 2018 season had. Advanced ticket sales has sold this event out.
It's crazy. It's pretty exciting. Last year we did that VIP breakfast prior to the Brewers On Deck, and it was a big hit. And, again, that one sold out again very, very fast this year. So I look forward to sitting with about six or seven people, have a good breakfast, and then going out and covering the alumni trail as everybody hits the superstars from the 18 Brewer team.
Well, and it's amazing, Paul, because Tim and I talk about this all the time, man. 10 years ago when I started going to the event, it was at a mall. It was in the food court. They had like six guys come in and everyone got a picture signed by all the players, and that was it. And now for 12 hours of the day, they got guys, you know, Paul Wagner face painting with your kids and field instructions. There's anything and everything you could imagine at this event. But like you said, man, the superstars are going to be everywhere from that team last year.
Oh yeah, it is. It's a greatly run. It's a great event. It's run perfectly. There's no confusion. It's pretty much set in stone. Every player, every alumni, every coach has his itinerary. Everybody has a little, somebody to shuffle them around and put them in the right place at the right time. If you're going from six people sitting in a food court in a mall to right now, you've gone from, that house to the penthouse.
Yeah, because you're in line to get Junior Spivey's autograph, and now it's the National League MVP and Christian Yelich in a huge event.
No, absolutely. It's going to be great success, and everybody's going to have questions. Everybody's going to want to congratulate the players. Everybody's going to want to know if they can do it again, just like everybody, just like all of us. We're all fans, and you know what? The 2019 season could be very exciting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wags, we talked a lot of baseball with you, man, on this show last year and on the postgame show, and it was obviously such a special run, but as you know better than any fan watching the game, it's hard to recreate one season. The wins and losses are one thing, but the mantra of that clubhouse last year and the last couple of years has been everybody's betting against us. Nobody expects us to be here. You come a game away from going to the World Series, everybody expects you to get back to that point. Well, especially maybe not everybody, as Vegas has them at 83.5 wins and FanGraphs put them at 79. Where do you see this team slotting in the 2019 season?
You know, you're right. It is. It's tough. We always use that cliche. You got to take advantage of that window of opportunity to win. But I look at the Brewer team. There's two different mixes. First off, the way Craig managed that team was very, very unconventional down the stretch, especially with using pitchers in different situations. So can that aspect be repeated? I don't know. And then you look at the coaching staff. The coaching staff has changed. It's changed dramatically. I don't know the new pitching coach, but I've known DJ for a long time. I think Derek is one of the best pitching coaches that I've known and I've listened to, and I can actually grab a chair and sit down and listen to DJ talk about pitching and his philosophies. I used to do it even when he was still down at Vanderbilt. So, you know what? There's a different way of managing as we saw Craig do it, and now we got different coaching and different coaching philosophies coming in. I don't know. I'm very, very – but I'm excited. I'm excited because the team was so well, did so well, and was so up for the challenge. And it seems like it's a no-brainer. It can be repeated. I think this window of opportunity isn't a small window. I think maybe about a 2 or 3 year window. And I think that's where Mr. Stearns comes in and he fills the gaps and makes the price right for the next 2 to 3 years.
Let's talk Craig Counsell. And one of the better managers in the National League and gaining respect. But what do you think he's learned from the 2018 season? Coming so close and doing what he's doing, having the flexibility to, you know, be a little goofy with his pitching staff and going to Hader or some of these other guys or getting these magical, you know, 15 to 17 outs. What do you think is the most important thing he learned from what he went through in 18?
I think, personally, just what I kind of touched on, he can be unconventional. Even though Craig has been around the game for 50 years, you know what? There's places where the game can be changed, and you can go an unconventional route. I'm not sure if you can do this route in this way for a long extended period of a time. I do believe it will catch up to you eventually. But I think Craig realized that going with his gut, saving Josh for maybe removing it with his gut feeling, taking the ball away from JJ, or even putting JJ back in that situation when other people questioned it. I think he's learned a lot about his gut, and his gut can tell him a lot because Craig Counsell's been around a heck of a lot of baseball, and I think that's probably the hardest thing. you lean so often on your coaches and the guys sitting next to you on the bench for reassurance on, should I pull this? Should I do this? Should we double switch here? Should I bring in lefty righty? What about the way the, what is the other manager going to do? Is he going to bring that righty off the bench or is he going to keep the lefty in? I think after you do it for a few years, you start to go with your gut, and instead of asking for opinions or instead of asking for direction, you ask for opinions, and then you just go with your gut.
Talking with Paul Wagner on the Wendy's Big Show for a couple of more minutes. Wags, something you just said in there, learning from either success or a mistake. I still go back, man, to that Game 7 of the CS, pulling Chassin after the two innings and then going with Hader when you don't have the lead. I still believe to this day that was one of the biggest blunders that Craig has made in his short managerial career.
But they didn't score any more runs, though.
Exactly. From that point. They didn't score any more runs, but when you're talking about a gut, is there such a thing when you're in that clubhouse, the Dodgers looked over and said, dude, their hammer's gone. This is our game to win now. I thought momentum completely shifted on that play. And I'm not necessarily asking for your thoughts necessarily on just that play in general, yeah. But the clubhouse feel when you see another team's superstar being neutralized for the last five innings of the game.
I don't know necessarily how the Dodgers or how the other 25 guys will look at it or their manager will look at it, but I believe that the 24 guys that we have in our clubhouse felt like, hey, this is how we do it. You can't go to game two unless you win game one. You can't do game four unless you win game three. Whether or not you have it in a bag or not, man, I've been around this game for very, very long. This little white ball, that little white ball will humble you to death. You think, once you think you got this game figured out, you're wrong. I mean, it's a crazy, crazy game. So I don't necessarily worry so much about the little enthusiasm that I give to my opponent, because I know that my 25 guys feel that whoever gets the ball in that situation can stick it up someone's. And that's the way you got to feel. That's how championship teams do.
Yeah.
If you're worried, you're a championship team and you're worried about hurting or making somebody feel good or see how they, then you're in the wrong business, because these 25 guys believe they can win the World Series. And I don't really care what anybody else thinks. I don't even care what horse they think they're riding on.
Three dudes in the outfield, obviously Kane, Yelich, and Braun. In the infield, Shaw, given the fact that he plays third, Arcia at short. You go with a little bit of a platoon factor at second base between Spangenberg and HP, and there might be another name or two there. And then Zeus at first, Grandal now behind the plate. Any concerns offensively?
No, none. Nope, I don't. I don't expect Yelich to repeat. I don't think anybody does. But I think you got to expect him to be at that consistent level now that he's that type of player. Kane, great. I have a feeling, and I've said this many years in a row now, but you know, Ryan Braun is he's due for, you know, maybe 120, maybe some more games. Maybe this lights a fire under him, and he realizes that he can take care of himself. Hey, there's certain things as you get old that you just can't control, backs and arms and legs, but I'm expecting a little bit more productivity out of Ryan Braun. Catching, great. I love it. The only thing I'm concerned about is their pitching staff. And, you know, I'm curious. I've seen a lot of elbows. A lot of pitchers can come back from Tommy John. It's that shoulder. It's that shoulder that's a booger. If you think, I just want to see Jimmy Nelson. I want to see if he can get back to where he's at. And if he can, he's definitely going to be a help. But I don't think you ever have enough arms, and especially if you're contemplating even tossing that six-man rotation or 14 men in the bullpen or the pitching staff. I mean, 13 guys, you've got to have guys that can eat innings up, and that's what I want. We need some inning eaters.
Well, finally here, Paul, I'll go off that point, man. There's a guy that has eaten more postseason innings in the last two decades and dominated the postseason better than anyone, and Madison Bumgarner being a total trade chip open there. But it's going to cost you. For 1 year, what does that do to this team?
If I can get him, you don't got any inside info. Is it done deal?
No. Sadly, no. Sadly, not yet, no.
I got to weigh it. I got to see what they want. But at $12 million in free agency, if we're not going to QO him, I give them one of those starters. I'd prefer to give hang on to Woody and Burns. If I have to pick one of the three, unfortunately, I would have to part with Freddie. But to get Madison Bumgarner, a staple, a postseason guy, a veteran, to come in for $12 million this year and non-QO him or let him go as a free agent next year, I think it's a gamble we're taking. I'd love to get something like that.
Wags, we appreciate the time, buddy. We're not going to be able to be at the VIP breakfast because, you know, Tim and I are working on these radio budgets. But we'll see you on Sunday at On Deck, man, all right?
Hey, I got one thing, though. Timmy,
yo.
You go to Vegas a lot.
Yeah.
You know what? You talk like a sausage sometimes. It's like, hey, you walk into that casino that pays you out. Are you going to avoid that machine? Or are you going to go back to that machine that paid you out 60 times in a row?
I like to switch it up a bit.
Man, the New England Patriots, they cover against the Chargers. They outright beat the Chiefs. If you go against the GOAT, you're just kicking yourself.
Well, Paulie, let me tell you what happened in Vegas when we went the first year. I walk in hot to trot. Guys, there's no way you can bet against Brady. Really? There's no way you can bet against Brady. It's Matt Ryan against Tom Brady. And this guy next to me right here, Tim Allen, said, but wouldn't it be so much more fun if we all were cheering for the same team?
So I talked him into betting Atlanta. And that didn't work out well. But we all bet as a group last year with Philadelphia, and we all celebrated and getting hammered.
Yeah, sure we were.
And I played with Jared's dad, Jerry Goff, for a few years in baseball. Jerry was a catcher with me when I got sent down from Cleveland. We were down at AAA in Buffalo together. So it's neat to see Jerry's son Jared playing, great quarterback going to the Super Bowl, and obviously Patty Mahomes and Junior having such a great year in Kansas City. Baseball players are coming to fruition in the football game.
Well, and two ways. Interesting. I know I said it was last one, but we lie on here all the time. What do you think about Kyler Murray deciding to go play football over baseball?
I think he should go play baseball.
I would say the same thing.
Really?
I'd say baseball. With him, I go baseball. If someone's willing to go in the top 10, if the New York Giants or someone or something like that, or somebody after that are thinking about getting him 10, 12, I just think with his size and with his skill set, I think you're better off playing a little bit of baseball first. But hey, what's in your heart is hard to determine. And if he's got it in his heart and he wants to be a football player, never bet against a man who played quarterback and won the Heisman Trophy. I can tell you that much.
That's a great point, Paul. Appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk on Sunday at On Deck. All right.
All right, boys. Have a good one.
There's Paul Wagner, former Brewer pitcher on the Great Midwest Bank hotline. Started a renovation journey. The simple and convenient pre-approval process from Great Midwest Bank, dedicated to providing perfectly personalized home loans to those right here in our communities since 1935. How about a stunner by Paul Wagner on the way out?
Don't
play baseball.
Wow.
And a little hammer on you, which I enjoyed, too.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that as well.
He called me a sausage.
No, I believe it sounds like you talk with a sausage in your mouth. I thought that was the quote.
Is that what he said?
I didn't know if I had to dump that or not.
I don't know. I still don't know what it means.
I don't either. But I like it. It might be featured on the next Tim and Tausch of the Morning podcast.
Yep.
Tim Allen in for Gary and Stevie. I'm Bill Schmidt, Baby Tausch, the Wendy's Big Show on the...
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.